I wish I would have thought like that at, you know, 24, 25, and even younger. I wish I would have thought like this at 18, man. It's beautiful, but it's also a really big testament that we've learned again that our audience is hyper, hyper loyal, but like also can be swayed pretty easily. So it's a weird conundrum, right, to navigate of. I really wanted, again, I keep saying that word authentic. I wanted somewhere that thought the same as I did in what we built with Rocker. And like everything I do, everything I talk about, everything that we do, everything we talk about, it comes and goes with the fans and how they interact and how many people come to the major, how much fun they have, what show we put on. I always tell individuals to come with some value first. Individuals are doing all this work already on the back end because they're so passionate, but then they just like cave and say, hey, do you have a job? If you come with some value, man, oh my God, it sets you apart so differently, so, so, so much differently. A lot of the individuals that are in DMs or wherever it's being communicated at the time.
Welcome everyone to episode 152 of the COD Casuals. We're your host Justin,
and I'm Mike.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing good, bro.
I'm doing good.
I'm chilling. Yeah, man. We just got done busy work day. Mm-hmm. We were just talking about how we love the short week since we had that Monday off, but it still does feel like a drag. That's for sure, man.
Yeah,
I mean, it's brutal. It's like I was hoping that tomorrow would be Friday, but sadly, no.
I know, but you got to cram in 5 days into 4 days.
Oh yeah. It's brutal, but hey, what you gonna do though? You doing all right, man?
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, good to hear.
Especially today, we got a very special guest. Mm-hmm. I got a little intro for this guy.
Let's hear it.
So, obviously, a very special guest today. Without individuals like him, we would not have major esports teams to support, or live events like the CDL Major 1 in Boston that will be happening at the end of this month. He was formerly part of V1 and Minnesota Rocker, working in marketing and partnerships. He's moved on now to becoming the director of partnerships at Oxygen Esports. He's our first ever guest of 2024. Let's welcome Dylan Pomeroy.
Oh, wow, man. Thank you, guys. That was beautiful. I need like a little sizzle or something in my profile, like a Bruce Buffer action. That's incredible, man. No, appreciate you guys for having me. That's very kind and very humbling. So thank you for having me. And it's great to catch up with you guys. Big fans. So I'm proud to be here and happy to be here.
Yeah. Thanks, man. We appreciate it. We appreciate you responding to us and hopping on. So I guess like we got some questions here. We're going to start off. Who is Dylan?
Well, I will say too, I might even mention this in this podcast, but I take a lot of pride in responding to everything and everyone, LinkedIn, Twitter, DMs, whatever it might be. I believe that it goes down in the DMs. So firmly stand behind that. It's funny that you mentioned that piece. But Dylan, so I am a resident of Minnesota. I like to mention that piece at least. I'm super pumped to be with Boston Breach now with Oxygen Esports. It was a blessing to stay within esports as I sort of exited Minnesota Rocker in version one and was really proud of what we accomplished there and moving into, you know, the lovely open Bostonian arms of Breach and Oxygen is definitely a blessing. I grew up in the cities. I went to school in Wisconsin and I started a business outside of when I graduated. I started a marketing business and that took me across the nation a bit. I had a bunch of clients all over. One of my last clients before I got out of it was in the tech and esports side. So here I am now getting to enjoy the spoils of the ups, the downs, the tumultuous and enjoyable nature of esports that I know we all enjoy. So, you know, and kudos back to you guys. Like the world of esports is only going around if there's coverage that's not forced upon it by league-based items, org-based items, whatever it might be. So you guys have a super important role in this as much as anyone.
Yeah, man, we appreciate that big time.
Yeah.
You know, well, I mean, it's like the same thing. We all feel like we're all in this together at some point. Like everybody is kind of putting in their little piece to help try to build this to, I think, eventually what we all know it can and will be in like within probably, I don't know, 5 years, 10 years, and then hopefully for the future we'll be like these other franchise leagues where we're going to be 100 years, hopefully in. It will be long gone, but we'll be the pioneers, you know?
Amen. Amen.
Yeah. So I wanted to lead with Dylan. So you had like a varied background before you ended up getting into esports, like you just mentioned. Growing up in Minnesota, were you much of a gamer? Was there any like background playing with your friends? during school, after school? Like, how did that like seed get planted?
Yeah, hell yeah. I mean, I typically, I usually mention my little brother. Him and I played growing up, like all FPS, a lot of Madden, a lot of NHL. Obviously, we were like a Halo family to start with. My brother's 2 years younger than me, and it's like, I don't know. I always joke that he missed that cusp of like, the Dr. Disrespect, like blockbuster, two-time energy type thing, because he was really good at everything, and he's a super smart kid. excuse me. So playing a lot with him growing up was awesome, but I haven't mentioned it before, but I do always think about backyard baseball and like the different PC games, because I kind of started out as like an OG PC guy before. I mean, this was like late 90s. Like I was like 6 years old, 5 years old. And so I never mentioned that piece. I always talk about being like an FPS, like like young ranked gunner. But I do think a lot of my gaming background started just hanging out, playing like backyard baseball. Or I played the original Myst, had no idea what I was doing, but would just run around playing Myst. And so I enjoyed those pieces, but was always competitive. And always enjoyed gaming, like I think a lot of us do, but like stuck with every Call of Duty, every Halo, and then college, there like wasn't a thing after it. So my competitiveness went into like sales and partnerships and marketing, and so it translated, and ironically now I work in gaming, but sort of full circle all around. But what were you guys OG? Were you OG COD kids? What were you before?
Yeah, I mean, I played COD for a while. My first COD was MW2, but I went back and played World at War, COD 4, and have been playing like ever since. Mike's been playing a little longer than me.
Yeah, I started on, so I had a PS2 growing up, and then the first one I remember playing Medal of Honor, yep, before anything. And then Call of Duty Finest Hour. That was the first COD that I ever played, which was a single player COD.
Yeah.
And it was so scary that that's like, I remember playing that game, I was horrified. Even still, like I'd gone back and played in the last 5 years. I'm like, man, this game is like the setting of those games was so scary.
Which one was World War II? Was that Medal of Honor?
Medal of, like, so I played for Rising Sun and then Frontline.
Yeah,
those two. Yeah, and
yeah.
Rising Sun is the one that starts off in Pearl Harbor.
Okay.
And then Frontline's the one that starts off on Normandy Beach.
Yeah, Normandy. I did that for a project at school. I was like a seventh grader.
Really?
And I did a playthrough of it. I have vivid memories of this. And like, I don't know why or what the premise was. It was probably some World War II project, but I remember using that as like a project.
Yeah. I mean, I played those, but then I played Call of Duty. Like I played the campaign, and then that's when I got the PS3, and World at War was my first one, mm-hmm, which was just equally as terrifying. And then that's where I really got into multiplayer. And then of course I went back to COD 4, and then MW2 came out, and then that was it.
I love that.
I was hooked on that one.
A little resume. Yeah. I love that. It's funny.
Yeah. I mean, I think all those older CODs too, like, now, like seeing where people started on them, I mean, it's always MW2 as the one where people, they view that as the turning point in their gaming career, so to say.
Agreed. Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. It's it was such a cool time. It was like prestiges were like a really cool place. Online was still in like the no SBMM, like skill based stuff. Like, what a fun time, man. What a fun time.
We still yearn for those days.
I know.
That's right. It's like the mines. You know, you can't help it.
While you're growing up, like when you got into FPS games with your brother, did you have any aspirations of, you know, ever becoming a pro or like trying to become a pro?
Well, it's funny, man. Like I just turned 31 this year, and like it blows my mind how old that is at the same time, how young it is. Like I'm so old in gaming, and luckily I have that like cusp of not being, granted there's Gen X, but we always say boomers, right? Like we skip Gen X and like just make fun of boomers. And I can't even explain it, man, but like there wasn't anything. Like there wasn't a way to go pro, at least that I knew of at the time. There's a little bit of YouTube, but even there, like I remember really getting into, like this is like 07, 08, where that's right around kind of being at the peak of whether it was Halo or Call of Duties. And obviously that's right before MW2. And like those pieces were just not in place yet. And like, I look back at old videos now and it's cool because like the framework was there, but I don't know. Everything happens for a reason, right? I can't imagine what my life would be like now if I would have kept that same passion. Cause I was the guy that we use the term closeted gamer, right? Which is just like such an incorrect term. But I would game until like 3, 4, 5 in the morning. I'd play Halo or COD or whatever. And then I'd wake up and go to school and like loved football, loved soccer, was in track. Like I was this, you know, captain of sports and jock. And like, I loved Pokemon. And like, I loved, like I mentioned, computer games. It was so nerdy back then that it's funny that it's sort of switched nowadays. And when I work with high school gamers and college gamers now, they're athletes, you know, they're true athletes. So long answer of being like, I wish that would have been more, I don't even know, Googleable or YouTubeable, but I was just happy to like be a part of the online and the, I have a ton of friends from that era still, but I would have loved to have gone pro in something. I'm sure I wasn't quite good enough, but hey, I'm an anchor guy. I'm a team guy, as Tim would say. Right. So there would have been someplace out there for me.
Yeah. I think we talked about that too, because both of us were 25. So when we were growing up in school, there was no,
yeah,
like
right there.
Yeah. But there was no path or like thought of like gaming being a profession, you know. It was pretty much just going to be a pastime. And it's like, oh yeah, if you want to go and you get some extra time and if your parents let you, you'll go and play and kind of leave it at that. But I would say for like both of us too, for myself and Justin, that it was when we saw guys like Skump or any of these other YouTubers and then started realizing that they made money off of YouTube for playing video games. And then also we're like, wait, these guys actually play on a team and they compete. Like, did you ever have that realization when you were maybe watching YouTube and you're like, wait, these guys make money, or there's actually a professional scene? You talk about that?
Yeah, I would say it's funny you put it that way, because definitely Skump, and actually for me, Zuma was one of the first guys I saw. I mean, it wasn't because of anything else besides him as a pro, but I just loved this, like, ironically, the flank. I loved this idea of like Zuma being known for flanking and thought that was so cool. Honestly, Super Smash was a big deal, like late high school and even in my college days, where those were the first types of things that were like camps or were competing at a high level and, you know, doing things like that. But yeah, I mean, transparently, once I found Call of Duty as a pro scene, which would have been in college, so like, let's say like 2010, right? Like 5, 6, 7 years older than you guys. But once I saw it, I was obsessed. And I even tell my friends about that now that aren't in this space. And they think I have such a cool job. And like, you know, I'm sure you guys get the same thing where it's just such a fun, it's such a fun like aspect that it's hard to explain to people unless you're ingrained in the social media side of it. But once I found, this would have been probably World at War, maybe even earlier, Advanced Warfare. But I just got obsessed with the comm scene, obsessed with the pro scene, and I fell in love with like the social media side of it, you know, watching the banter. So once I found it, they couldn't get me out of it. And that was, you know, 2013 to 2016-ish. And then I really wanted to get into it. And so 2017, 2018, became obsessed with somehow getting into the scene, whether it was clearly more as a profession, but still an enjoyable piece of like my hobby and kind of like a side gaming career for sure.
Yeah, no, when I started watching like competitive COD, it was around the 2011, 2012, like Nate Shot era when he was still on Optic. And totally. I remember just showing my dad, like, look at these guys, they're playing video games like on a team and they're making money. And he would always tell me, you know, yeah, sure, well, whatever. And now he's seen like the scene just grow. And now I feel like a lot of parents now are like into it and they're like, oh, okay, this is actually a thing. You can definitely go into this. It can be a career, not just as a gamer. Obviously, you're a great example. You can go in on the professional side and, you know, love your job doing it.
100%. I think that's the thing that comes up the most with parents nowadays is that I remember giving tours back at Rocker HQ or like speaking at a high school, and they always ask me like when I find time to practice. And I'm like, no, no, I'm like, this is my whole job. Like I sell partnerships. Like I bring in the USAAs, the Nikes, the Crocs. Like I play on my own time, but like they always thought I was like, you know, Jackie Moon, like player coach, GM, sales guy. No, it's a great way to do it. And to your point, Justin, like my dad still doesn't really know what I do, but he sees like I show him Rocket League and Call of Duty Champs stuff all the time. And the passion's there. It's hard to deny any sort of passion, especially something in in something like gaming.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I'm not as big of a sports guy as Justin is, and like some of our other friends, like they're all into like every other sport. But that's the thing that I find unique about esports in particular is like the fan base. There's very few sports where everybody is so locked into it. And there's like, you know, like you go to an NFL game or like I follow racing, like you go to a Formula One race, like not everybody who's there at those events actually follows it. You know, they may be like dragged along by like a friend or whatever. But nobody just kind of casually walks into an esports event. You know, everybody who's there knows what's going on. Mm-hmm. You know,
most educated fan base. That's a very well said, Mike. Like that is a big piece of, you know, when you talk about sports, like going to a hockey game in Minnesota is different than going to a hockey game in Arizona or Florida. Like the education behind it is a big piece. And it's a really cool part about it. We talk a lot about this in marketing and partnerships where the 1% of our fandom is so important to make happy versus the 99 percentile. And we want to keep people becoming 1%ers, of course, but like, it's so much more important to like speak the language, talk the talk. And like, rather than being like, you know, send your favorite clip, like it's just, you know, we want to be more genuine than that and more authentic than that. And I think that's a big thing we play on, especially in the org side. It's a really good point. Really good call up.
Yeah. And going off of that, while you were spending your time at Minnesota Rocker version 1, I think you guys did a fantastic job, like including the fans and the community into the actual team and, you know, buying into the team. When Mike and I actually first started this podcast, Minnesota Rocker was actually the first team that actually interacted with us like on a daily basis.
I love it.
And funny enough, Brett Diamond, the CEO, he was one of the first, like, I would say, big individuals in the scene, followed us. And I remember that day vividly because Mike and I were like, this is crazy. Like, why is he following us?
I love that. It kind of gives me chills even thinking back to it because I know what you're talking about. And that energy around CDL, you know, becoming CDL from CWL, like the energy was different. You know, it was a very palpable, like fresh landscape. And Brett's a big mentor of mine. I hold myself in a lot of same regards of a lot of lessons I learned from Brett, ways I carry myself, things I mentioned. Brett was someone who taught me to respond to everything. So like, it's great to hear you mention, you know, Brett. I love that dude. And he did a lot for an org and a lot for the space that wasn't asked of him. And I look up to him greatly. So he's a great example of someone that was really good for this space and I think did a lot for things, especially when it came to fan facing. And I think, you know, Murph and Adam and the guys over at Breach do as well. Like there have been a lot of individuals there that the fan touch point, especially Boston, like Boston is such a like hardy community that coming from Minnesota, it's interacting a bit differently, but I love the energy and I'm not that I'm blunt by any means, but I am a little more being in partnerships. You kind of have to be, right? You have to be a little decisive and you have to be a little articulate. Working with Boston, you know, individuals, it's nice because it's pretty articulate. It's pretty straightforward. So I love their goals and I love our goals when it comes to fan facing items, interactive touch points, things like that is a huge deal. Huge deal.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, building off of that, like, can you talk about the importance of building those relationships with fans and then that overall being the growth within like a team base and then also within like a fan base of the CDL? Because I think that's a big thing that you can see the huge like discrepancy between those teams that put in a lot of the effort. Like, I mean, I'd easily say right now it's definitely Rocker and then Breach. For like some of the top teams, of course, like FaZe and Optic, because the fan base they've already had. But there's no doubt that Rocker and Boston have huge loyal fan bases. And that's not just by chance, right?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's something we're conscious of. You know, I'll say again, like peeking behind the curtain of an org, the way that I've learned to understand the marketing of it and the way that I've sort of built, whether it's the reputation I have or reputation with other you know, what I do with orgs is we do sort of look at it as like 4-4-4. And what I mean by that is like the top four orgs are the ones you can probably imply. The middle four, it's a lot of shuffling. And we, Rocker, Breach, you know, I think the other two teams can fluctuate, but a lot of times it's the same two. And then there's the bottom four. We try to like fight for spots in that mid four, because the top four, you know, your optics, your phases, your 100 tees, like these individuals are going to be all over. And I think like Toronto kind of can jump up there. New York kind of jump up to the fourth spot. Hopefully us, Minnesota, those are where we try to fit in. And the way you get there is by working with your fans. Like FaZe, you know, Justin, you mentioned 100 T, like with Nate Shots Energy, they're going to have innate fandoms. And I think people forget that like Skump controls more than Optic probably does, right? Like, I'm sure that's probably a little bit of an overstatement, but like, it's the LeBronism, right? People follow LeBron where he goes because they like LeBron. And I think this generation, like Gen Z, Gen Alpha, they're sort of the first individuals really okay with doing that. And we're conscious of that too. So where I'm going with this is that, like, I love the question, because building a fan base isn't as simple as like tweeting a lot. It's not as big as even like replying to people and following people, even though you had that great interaction, let's say with Brett following you guys, that's cool, but that's super memorable. And like, hopefully Brett continued to like foster that relationship by liking things, you know, hopefully our interactions and relationships continue where we're now going to be friends and that helps build a fandom. So the innate energy is like, it's a lot. Like, passion has to be first and then like work has to be second, because this industry doesn't, you know, unfortunately doesn't run on passion, but it does run on good hard work. And building a fan base comes from, you know, authentic content, which I've mentioned, authentic touch points, which I've mentioned, but also just comes with consistency and time, man, which is something that I believe in, and which is why I really believe in this industry, and why I you know, keep pushing and keep pushing to bring brands in that I do that want to interact authentically, aren't just open to like logo slap or do something, you know, smaller scale like that.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that Minnesota Rocker, and when the breach, when they came to the CDL, it was very clear that when they came in, they invested into their players. And I'm a big believer of right now, like, the players run the orgs. And like you said, us as fans, a lot of us follow the players, and wherever the player goes, we typically follow them. And I know out of like my friend group, I'm a Patriots fan, but I'm a fan of Jalen Hurts, who's a quarterback for the Eagles. Absolutely. And a lot of my friends hate that, but I can't hate the guy, because I just like how good he is. He seems like a really good guy, but it seems like a lot of people our age, even younger, they're okay with separating, you know, the team base. They're following the individuals.
100%. I think it's such a funny thing that I'm glad you're learning. Not that you're like a young age, but like, I wish I would have thought like that at, you know, 24, 25, and like even younger. I wish I would have thought like this at 18, man, because you can like things. Like, I think we're so ingrained into like, what's your favorite color? What's your favorite color today, right? Like, what's your favorite team? What's your favorite team or player today? What has an org who you are a fan of done for you recently? Are there other opportunities to find a new org to like? Like, I think that's where it's beautiful, but it's also a really, you know, big testament that we've learned again that our audience is hyper, hyper loyal, but like also can be swayed pretty easily. So it's a weird conundrum, right, to navigate of, can we send a jersey to this guy who also might be asking five other people for a jersey? It's a very interesting piece, but whoever gets that jersey to him first might be the best interaction that they've had or that she has. So I find it fascinating, but you're dead on. And like, it's chill, man. Like the Eagles and like Jalen Hurts and like the Patriots, who cares? It's all good.
Well, yeah. And it's the same thing with like with teams right now in the CDL. Cause again, like Justin was saying, I mean, we're all that individually. We don't have to share our players, but we all have those guys that we like, and we'll always follow them,
right?
You know, no matter where they go. And that's not like, but it's weird though, because again, I'm not obviously like we're breach guys through and through, but there's players like Attach. Like, that's one of my
Dylan guys. Dylan was the one who came to my mind first, for sure.
Yep. He's a guy who, like, no matter where he goes, I'll always support him. And then it's the same thing, too, which I think is unique with esports, or at least with what some of these teams have built, mainly the Breach, because I didn't even know who Nero was or who Capsule was. And then they come in, and now, like, I actually look forward to seeing a Vegas Legion game, because I'm like, Attach is on there. And then we got Nero as well, you know?
Well said.
So they do such a good job of building those guys up.
I think that with Big Cap, especially. I think that with Dylan. Like, Dylan, again, in my life, specifically at Rocker and now getting to work at Breach, like, these interactions with these players, is it I try to keep it really professional because I have things I need to get done for partners. Like that is really cut and dried. And that's unfortunate. Like, again, I can compartmentalize my life pretty specifically. I like to think of myself as a professional and hopefully intelligent in this space, but like the personal relationships are so deep, you know, like I got to work with Joey Nubsy at Rocker for a while and like, talk about like the coolest, funniest, most genuine dude. And talk about Dylan. Like Dill was so good at delivering on things. And we literally called him the politician. You know, he's just like a handshaker, baby kisser. He's so good for the sport. And now I'm so juiced, you know, I get to work with Preston again. I get to work with Priesta, get to work with Slasher, like one of these, you know, these legends of the game. But to your point, man, Cap and the rising young star. And I don't know if I can swear. I'm assuming I can swear. But I said frickin'. Freaking Snoopy. Fucking Snoopy. I'll do it that way. But Snoop is, these guys are just professionals, man. And I'm seeing that sort of maturity happen more and more as the league matures and things settle out. You know, a lot of esports, Call of Duty especially, like the league with everything, like nothing disparaging to say about that, but Valorant, League, like all these pieces inflated player salaries and partnerships and merch dollars and ticket sales weren't going with it. And I think things are leveling out nicely now, but the biggest thing is that it's reciprocal, right? We treat players with respect, players treat the org with respect, the org treats the fans with respect, and it goes in a big circle, which is just super important to the life cycle of the league overall.
Yeah, and I will say that those fan meetups and like events you guys held at Minnesota Rocker, those were awesome. Like I remember specifically the one where you guys were outside with the giant like inflatable what was it?
Yeah, we were over at the brewery.
Yeah.
Serious. Surly.
Yeah,
I think it was Surly Brewing. Yep. Anyways, continue. Yeah.
But I remember Mike and I, we manifested like Boston has to have a team. They have to have a team. And I really hope when they come in, all these events are going to happen. You know, they're going to do like watch parties. And luckily enough, they did come in and they've been amazing with the watch parties.
It's a gift from God, bro.
Yeah. I know. Well said. We actually have our first one coming up in like a week or two at Helix there in Foxborough. I think it's next week.
Yes, next week.
It is next week.
Thank you. Look at you guys. You know my life better than me. So, yeah, I will say, like, not to cut you off, but to technically cut you off. That was a big piece of why I went to Boston. I was really looking for, because transparently, I interviewed with a lot of teams, with a lot of orgs. Like, I wasn't sure I was even going to stay in the space, man. I'll be honest. So when I made that decision, and when I got to talk to Murph and talk to Adam, talk to my current boss, Philip, our SVP of partnerships, like I really wanted, again, I keep saying that word authentic, but like I wanted somewhere that thought the same as I did in what we built with Rocker. And like fans don't come first, but they come first. Like my job comes first. Like I have to deliver on sales and make these numbers, but everything I do, everything I talk about, everything that we do, everything we talk about, it comes and goes with the fans and how they interact and how many people come to the major, how much fun they have, what show we put on. The watch party aspect, the high school and collegiate aspect, those are really big pieces of what I do and really believe in. So, transparently was really looking for something like that, and Breach checked all those boxes for me big time. And, I hope you can keep building on that, 'cause I think I left a lot unopened with Rocker, and now with their, you know, G2 ownership, I hope they continue that, but, it's not my problem. I get to do it now here and have a blast doing it. So that's more important to me.
Yeah. So if I may, taking a step back, since we're kind of getting into your like professional career and where you are now at Boston, when you got out of college and then you were still working in the sales realm, was gaming still something that was in your scope of, you know, that would be a dream job for me to have, but the times just isn't right, or I can't really land that position that I'm looking for? Or was it something that once you had gotten out of like through college and then out of it, gaming had kind of taken like on the back burner? And then the opportunity came up to you. Can you talk about that a bit?
Absolutely. It was honestly an amalgamation of all the above. Like I was always passionate about gaming, so much so that my now wife, she was my girlfriend at the time. We had a talk, you know, about like Apex and like how much time is spent on Call of Duty when we first started dating. 'Cause I was, that was like 2017. And I was on the back end of like where my business was at. I was really, in my eyes, I was pretty successful. I had a great consulting career going, but was always a gamer. And you know, your point about backing it up even further, like, I thought about gaming a lot. I really enjoyed it, but I had no idea where to start. And I think that's what a lot of younger individuals feel these days. Like 25, 26, you know, you guys are easing your way, really establishing yourself in the workforce and like things like that. Again, not that we're super far in age, but I think a lot happens between 25 and 30. 20 to 25 is a crazy jump, right? Like, you don't know who you are. You don't know what life's about. When I was really passionate about gaming, and I like to joke that I was pretending to run a business, because I technically was, but we're all just faking it, right? We're all just faking it till we make it. And I was really faking it. I didn't know how to get into anything, except I just kept being confident and I kept trusting my skill set. When it came to gaming, I had no idea where to start. I didn't want to reach out to anyone at, like, you know, Hector at Optic and be like, hey, you got any jobs? I wanted to come across like someone who knew what they were doing. And so what I do recommend, and even in this space that it's kind of alluding to your question, Mike, is like, I started just covering esports. At the time I started an LLC, like, just called it MN Esports, MinnesotaEsports.com, and like started a little site where I covered what I knew about Minnesota esports. And what that slowly blossomed into was hearing about the Vikings organization, the Wilfs, possibly buying a CDL team after the franchising happened in, what was that, late 2019. So it was always in the back of my head, man. It was crazy. But like, once that I had a loose connection that I could actually go to and bring some value to, specifically at the time from the marketing front, I was super intrigued by it. So I took it and kind of ran with it. But like everyone, you're always just kind of hoping to break into the scene, whether it's something like you guys, or, you know, because I'm really fascinated with the content side as well. And I think it's really important. But there's all these pieces that factor into what's going on big time.
Yeah. No, I want to say, like, when you responded to us saying you've actually heard of us, we were very shocked. Cause it's always weird hearing people say they've heard of us, because we've only doing this for like a couple years.
Yeah.
There's not many out there, man. You guys, it's an important voice. So that's, I'll put it like that. You know, there's you search for these things, you come up. Like, that's how it thank works. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. Absolutely.
But no, it is it's definitely an interesting journey, though, that you'd have to go through before you end up kind of finding where you want, or like what you want to do in life. Because, I mean, I know we can both agree to that. Like, I don't know what I'm going to be doing in 5 years. Yeah. You know, like, I have my job now and we both feel like, oh, yeah, we're gonna be doing this for the rest of our lives. But you never know. You know, it's just like we kind of try to take it a day at a time. Like, obviously, we want to get into esports, like that being a full time career. But I really like your point of like, you didn't want to just kind of cold call and be like, hey, is there a job I can have? You know, you want to build your resume up and kind of get into it authentically. And then if that opportunity just by your work shows up across someone's desk and they see like, oh man, this guy Dylan's been in it for a long time, let's go give him a call and go about it that way. I think that's a smarter way to do it instead of just kind of seeing and like more desperate, if that's the right word. You know,
I'm totally with you. Again, you guys are crushing it. That's the key. Like, I talk a lot with college. You keep hearing me reference high school and college kids. Like, I talk to a lot of classes, partly because of my job. Like, I'm in sales and partnerships, and it's like a role that makes sense to talk to kids. But specifically being in gaming and esports, like, kids want to hear about this. Students want to hear about this. And I'll always harp on that is like, I get DMs a lot. I got one today from a guy like right before we hopped in on LinkedIn, and it was very, you know, it's just like, do you have any jobs available? And I'll usually say like, hey man, happy to hop on a call if you want to catch up, and I'll set aside 15, 20 minutes. And where I'm going with this is like, I always tell individuals to come with some value first. Like, if you come with man, again, I'm not an anomaly by any means, but when I interviewed with Brett initially, Justin, my guy Brett there at Rocker, I came with a deck. Like, I made a fake pitch deck and I was like, hey Brett, like, I saw you guys are coming to Minnesota. I Googled your name. I have no idea if you have roles available, but I made this sort of mock deck where I was like, here's how I would market a team if it came to Minnesota. And I had like fake billboards and radio ads. I had like a clip, you know, I used my own clips and like made a rocker. At the time we didn't know. We thought it was going to be like the Minnesota Lumberjacks or something. I don't even remember what people thought it was, but I made fake branding. And so anyways, I really think that individuals are doing all this work already on the back end because they're so passionate, but then they just like cave and say, hey, do you have a job? if you come with some value, man, oh my God, it sets you apart so differently, so much differently than a lot of the individuals that are in DMs or wherever it's being communicated at the time.
Yeah. And I think Mike and I learned that like after the CDL started, and not that like we don't hate our jobs or anything. Like I love my job, but we started this podcast because we play Call of Duty every day. We talk about COD every day, and we're like, why don't we just do something about
channel
it?
Channel that energy. That's right. Yeah. That's right.
And we've been COD fans for over a decade. So if there are people that know stuff about COD, we're part of it. Right. And just doing that and like explaining it to like, I guess a younger generation, I say younger generation while we're 25 going on
30, you know, it's 30 to 15 is so compact right now.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
It's crazy, but yes, I get what you're saying.
But Mike and I, we did a speech at Endicott College in Massachusetts, yeah. Oh, yeah. And we talked to management class about like just our brand, and it was so cool to us that we were able to help just, you know, younger kids that want to enter the scene, because even like us, like we didn't have this in college. There was like, you know, people that played video games, but there was no like esports major or, you know, esports classes.
I love it. It's addictive, man. The energy you get from that, like I'll have some of the worst days of my life. Like everything can go wrong. And if I, two pieces, honestly, if I talk to a student or talk to a class at the end of the day, or if I hop on a podcast, like I'm doing with you guys now, like it truly like rejuvenates every piece of energy that I have towards this. And like what I hated, a similar anecdote. I lived in Denver for a while, and I would drive home every day and I'd look at the mountains. Like I'd drive home from construction and look at mountains, drive home from construction, look at mountains, loved it. And I was like, the day I get bored of this, I got to move. And I remember being like really mad one day. I got super pissed and like, I drove home and I didn't like, I remember getting home and like, I was making coffee or whatever to wind down. And I didn't look at the mountains and get juiced. And it's the same with esports, where it's like the day you're not like juiced about it, you shouldn't even be near the industry. So I love that you get that from speaking to students, man. Like you guys have a really cool thing. And I think sharing that with individuals that, to your point, have no idea what to do and think that the life is just crashing down around them and they're going to be 22 and need to have their whole life figured out, it's just not the case. And like, I wish again, someone would have told me that. Brett ended up telling me that, but I was, you know, 25, 26 and like in a role now, but you need some good mentors. So you guys probably did a lot for that school that day. That's really cool that, that you guys saw that and got to do it. I hope you continue to do those things. That's a really big piece, really big.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's important too, for a lot of these people to realize, like, especially older kids, like people in college. I think there's like a general consensus or thought that a lot of people have it figured out. You're in college. It's like, okay, you know what you're going to do. You got it locked in. And then that we had told them, we're like, yeah, like Justin's in the financial realm. Like that's his job. I'm a school teacher. Like we don't do this as a job, you know? And they're like, would you want to? It's like, yeah, we'd want to for sure. But I think the importance of having a backup plan is something that is overlooked quite a lot by people, especially like with the kids I teach, like middle school kids, they're like, they don't have a concept of that, obviously. But even when you get into older people, then they were like, oh, I want to, like, this is what I'm going to do, which is great. But there's also part of me that's like, well, you should also think about, like, if that doesn't pan out, are there other things that you would like to do? Or if your dream doesn't come true, do you have a plan to then get to that dream? You know, like, or is it just kind of like you give up?
Yeah, it's beautifully put. And it's so crucial. Again, like, I wish someone would have told me those things. Like, I don't know if it was our parents or what, but like, my mom actually did a good job of this piece where it was like, there aren't any closed doors ever. Like, it's just another place you're going to go. And I think that's a huge piece where I never got down about anything. It was always just another thing. And whether I lost clients or lost money or lived in my car, like these were things that are just pieces of my life. Who cares? And I know what you mean with the blinders that middle school age especially have on right now, where they're hoping that the thing they're doing can be like their hobby. They all want to be YouTubers, right? Or they all want to be in content or TikTok. Like,
or basketball players.
Or basketball players, which is so interesting, right? Like, especially like, nowadays. Yeah, that's a tough one for literal the height disadvantage. But yeah. Just encouraging them, right? And I think even, you know, to your guys' point, like not even having a backup plan, like we can do zillions of things. It's not even a backup plan. You guys are, you have four different things you do. You're husbands or sons or uncles or whatever. You are professionals in a work career. You're in financials, you're teaching. Like I always know I can do more. And that's a big driver for me too, is like, I'll be honest. So, you know, you guys kind of asked me before the call, is like, were there things we didn't want to ever address? And I don't think there's ever something I don't talk about. But what I do mention sometimes is that, like, I am here to hang out with you guys. Being in esports doesn't define me whatsoever. I'm honored that you'll have me here and you think I'm an individual that's cool enough to come on your cool podcast. But I truly think that we're all just good friends and we can all help this industry together. It's just, it's super like hippie lovey-dovey mantra, but I believe that in my meetings at work, I believe that in my, you know, talks with schools, it's just a big piece that keeps the world going around and keeps esports definitely going around, is that kind of mental attitude.
Yeah. I totally feel that way too. Like every guest we've had on and everyone we've met at events, Helix, I try to treat them as, maybe it's too personal, but I'm like, you're my friend now, you know?
It's harder to be mad at your friends. That's my way of looking at it.
Yeah. Right. Especially too, like you said, the fans are so passionate. So when you're at a watch party sitting next to some random person that you don't know and some big play happens and you both cheer and you high five each other, it's that feeling's amazing.
Well said. It really is. I remember a guy taking his shirt off at the Up Down. We had a watch party at Up Down when Rocker Reverse swept Toronto, and he got like kicked out of the bar because he like took his shirt off and like jumped up on the bar and everybody's like, what's happening? And I'll never forget that guy. He's just some random dude. And we followed each other on Twitter that night. And we still keep up. Like, that type of interaction doesn't come from like just going to, you know, some sort of a networking event or something. It's so much more genuine when you're in the heat of it together. I love that.
I got to say too, that's got to be one of the most memorable moments, I would say, like, hands down. I don't even know if it's a hot take. I don't care. That's got to be the most memorable moment in the CDL of all time.
I would, it was memorable for me. You can kind of see it. Let's see here. Like this, you can see like a little beer case here. It's called Final Circle Shandy. We launched a Rocker beer during the same week. So like, selfishly, it was cool because we had this sick partnership, but we had like 8 kegs at this, you know, watch party, and it's all flowing for free. And then, of course, Rocker sweeps. It's just like a reverse sweeps. It was just like a really memorable moment for sure. But not only the competitive side, but like launching this. Oh, you can see the tap here too. This is the tap.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's super memorable. Shit like that is, again, it's what makes it. I'm excited to see what happens this year. What's going to be like the crazy shit that happens this year? It's just, it's hard to explain to people that aren't in the space, man.
No, for sure. So something I was going to ask, we were talking about the like partnerships. Can you talk about that a bit as to like what that kind of looks like for you? How do you go about reaching out to these groups and then like end up actually striking a deal with them? Because this is a side of esports that I think a lot of people tend to neglect or not really think about. They just think about the players and then the general manager, maybe a couple of people who make content. But there's a lot of the back end that really makes the machine go, which is what you do. So could you talk about that a bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I love this aspect of it. Obviously, it's my job, but selfishly, it's like, in my eyes, a really big cog of esports in general, and hopefully contributes to its overall success as time passes. When I mentioned I was a marketer, so like that was a piece of my life that I was really proud of. I went to school for marketing. I had an emphasis in sales, so like I knew that aspect. But one thing I didn't realize is when I started my marketing consulting business is that I thought I was marketing, like I'm doing like digitals and digital stuff and doing socials. What I really was doing was like selling myself to tech companies and startups and breweries and healthcare. Like I was basically this individual already that was in sales, but I was a marketer, you know, shielded myself. So when I got into esports, the same thing happened. I was like, I'm a marketer. I want to help grow these teams. And what ended up happening is I started, as you guys can probably tell, like I'm a really connection-based guy. I love talking with people. I love hearing other people's stories. That's why podcasts are sometimes interesting to me, is like, I probably already did it, but like I ask questions back, I feel like, which sometimes is a weird cadence for a podcast. But like when I started meeting more and more partners and clients in the space, I started closing deals as a marketer. And so eventually I was like, oh shit, I should get into the partnership side. There's a lot more value, you know, for my role there. So the way it sort of happens is like, really connection-based, especially for endemics, which is the term we use, obviously, for like in esports types of brands, you know, your Scuffs, your SteelSeries, your Respawns, like people in the space that already are doing stuff with other orgs. where I feel like I have value is as an educator, working with non-endemics, you know, your Bush's Beans, your USAAs, your Crocs, your Adidas, Nikes, like communicating what esports is, what it does. You know, people always, you guys have done it too, and I do it all the time. Like, we compare it to traditional sports a lot, T-sports, right? We call it, I find it interesting that a lot of times it's more like comparing us to an overall like media company or even a musician or a celebrity or a fashion, you know, type of media mogul, where we have assets like creators and streams and broadcast assets and skins and like so many other things than like a football like stadium and a jersey on an NBA player. Like, we have those things, but we have so many other digital aspects that are hard to get across to a company that always they're looking for Gen Z exposure, right? Like, I can't tell you how many times I get asked about Call of Duty and Rocket League. Can I be in an Apex skin? Like, things like that from a person who probably doesn't know what that means and how we translate that into their goals. So that's where I come in, is we sell those aspects. You know, if someone reaches out to Oxygen Esports, let's say, can you work with FPS? Can you work with Rocket League? And we sort of just work down there and then execute on deliverables and bring them in-house, and hopefully they end up being a long-term partner. So it's a fun process. I love it because it's not really like intensive sales. It's more relationship building, which again, I take a lot of pride in. So that's kind of like a, I don't know what I did, two-ish minute spiel there, but that's how it kind of works. And that's what I like to do with it. My day-to-day when it comes to partners.
Now, how important do you think it is to go to these brands that aren't into esports, and like the USAAs, the Crocs, for them to come in and like be very genuine about it? Because I think it's really important for brands like that that aren't educated about esports to come in and, you know, build a relationship and be faithful to esports as a whole, instead of just, you know, like you said, slapping their brand on and leaving the next year.
Yeah, I will say that I take this one really protectively. I don't know, protective is probably the wrong word, but like, I'm super protective about the brands I work with, the brands I have worked with. You know, a couple of examples that would be a good one. USAA is a great one, especially with Rocker. And we've done overlapping pieces with Boston Breach. We did a Combat Bowl recently. They did Code Bowl, as well as the Army-Navy game. So like, USAA is a good example of like, we wanted to come in at a place where it already made sense, which to USAA's point and with Call of Duty is boom, like easy. The overlap's there, the respect is there, the veterans initiatives are there. The harder ones, I would say, are like two examples would be Bush's Beans and Easter Seals. Easter Seals is a Oxygen Esports client where they do accessibility and like they're trying to level the gap in gaming. You know, they work with individuals that are at risk or have disabilities or things that hinder them from playing at the level that we assume and take for granted. And Bush's Beans is Bush's Beans. And what we had to do with these individuals was like communicate expectations. Like, you can't come in and just do whatever you want. We want to be respectful, but we also want to be respectful of your message to this audience. And that's an important piece, right? Is like, again, education. I feel like a lot of my time is spent just like, who is this audience? Even more specifically, is Rocket League is so much different than Call of Duty. So we can do more specific things with either. So it stems from a lot of education, but honestly, a lot of these brands, when they even ask me or slide into my DMs, as I've referenced before, is like, they're coming in with a preconceived notion about gaming. Almost always it's very high level, and then we nail it down further. But it takes a lot of time to like execute these deals, you know, and like the Bush's Beans one, I keep pointing the wrong way, but like Bush's Beans, they wanted to work with colleges and they wanted to fight youth hunger. Cool. Two really specific thesis statements that I can work with. Let's raise some money. We're working with college kids. Maybe we don't look for donations. Let's raise awareness. Like, we sort of just piece together goals, and then before we know it, we have good KPIs and we're able to execute on these good partnerships.
Yeah. And I would say too, a big thing, like as a viewer, is for it to seem like it's authentic, you know, like for you to have a brand deal and for something that would make sense. And then again, like you're mentioning the follow through on that aspect, to be like, oh, it seems like this brand, like whatever plan they have, they are following through and they really do care. And it is benefiting like somehow within the league or people outside of the league. I think that's a big thing too, in my view.
Yeah, it has to. I love the way you put that, because one thing that we talked about directly with like a Bush's Beans was like, they're going to meme you guys. Like, you have to be open. Like, you're not like, we want to be like the healthy alternative to meals. It's like, you're beans. Like, we're going to talk about beans. People are going to just tweet the word beans. Like, it's going to happen. So it's like, we had to have that conversation, because I've had to address it sometimes with past partners that I won't mention, but like, they think they are cooler than they are. And if you're in esports, welcome to the meme show. Like, you aren't going to get out of this without getting made fun of, a weird Reddit post. You know, I've even had to deal with like weird comments about me, and I'm like a small individual in this space. And I've had to deal with like, oh, people do react to things. Whether it's healthy or not, it's not up to me. It's a reaction, but like, it's a great call out, man. Like, Mike, you nailed it, where you have to be ready for just the actual fallout's the wrong word too, but like the actual thing that happens from your action, and being authentic to it makes it even, it lasts even longer. You know, it's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. It's like, Wendy's roasting everyone on Twitter or X.
I was just talking about this. It was a great strategy. They have to stick to it now though. You know, it's part of it. So it's part of it.
Well, and I think too, that's a big thing that a lot of these companies have done. Like, I've seen this with like Burger King, or just saying with Wendy's, or what's the other one that's on Instagram I see all the time? Slim Jim.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, whoever those people are that are like in that, like their social media managers, they've like made those brands cool. Not because of the product that they have, because like it's like a meat stick, like no one cares about that, you know. But it's the fact that like, oh yeah, those guys are cool because their social media guy, it doesn't take anything from people, you know. Like, people who are trying to roast or like make fun of other people, they like throw it right back at them, you know. Exactly. And that's what like, that's what I thought was so funny with I think was it Zed who went on stage? Well, didn't he go out in a whole like beans outfit?
Oh yeah. That was last year, right? It must have been Zed, because he's the man. But first off, yeah, I think it was in his beans fit. It's a good bit.
But it's like, I think little things like that, even though it's something that's funny, but it does kind of like lessen the blow to the brand. Like, people see that and they're like, oh, he's having fun with it. Like, he's kind of joking, like playing fun with it. So people don't look at it so negatively. It's like, you know, why do we have this company in our space? You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Cause that does come off sometimes, and you'll see it. I don't have any good examples off the top of my head, but, I always call it like, I think it's what's his face. There's a Parks and Rec episode where like Aziz Ansari becomes the new Chris, and he gets like made fun of all the time, and he can't handle it cause he's reacting to it, but you can't make fun of the guy who can't get made fun of. So it's always this trade off, but, you have to pardon me. I got my dogs have entered the room, so
don't worry about it.
I keep muting just in case they whine, but I still am here, I promise.
Yeah. Another question that we wanted to ask was, pivoting off of, you know, talking about brands and partnerships, bringing on Slasher and Priesta onto the Breach. How important is it to have these two guys on the team, not just for performance, but also, like we talked about earlier, they have a following. They have a fan base that follow. And I know I'm a very big fan of Slasher and Priesta, not just because they're on the Breach. Now I'm more of a fan. But I followed those guys religiously back when they were on 100T, back in the Black Ops 4. And it's crazy now to see them in person representing like our city.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, first off, huge. Like, to... we've already talked about Cap and Snoop. Like, I think they're going to be important young gunners, but like, I think that was a slight piece that was missing. Again, I can't speak to last year's performance, and this year we're getting after it. I feel good after the last kind of couple matches here, but I will say it's huge to watch from my side of things, especially being around these guys in this space for as long as we have now. You know, Preston is always, for some reason, having to prove people wrong, which is just crazy to me. He catches all this flack, his screenshots about his KD, like, there's all these little pieces that I feel, not that the man deserves his flowers, but he deserves his damn flowers. Like, it's crazy to me. You know, and Slasher's same energy, like, has been around the scene and done so much for the scene, yet still feels like he's always having to prove himself, which maybe it's just my interpretation of how socially and exteriorly speaking, I'm seeing things happen. But their veteran leadership, you know, their big followings, these guys, they know how to handle themselves as professionals. Those are things that are already rubbing off on, you know, Snoopy and Cap. And so it's fun to watch. And I think we'll see more and more from like the comms videos and like pieces of this actual season that come together as we do the podcast with the locker room and like all these sort of angles that it's just a really robust, like holistic approach to Boston Breach Call of Duty this year. And I think a lot of teams strive to have kind of two vets and two young guns or two up and comers and two older, you know, again, 27-year-olds, whatever, 26-year-olds, 25-year-olds that have been in the space for a while, but not a lot get to do it. You know, to your point too, Justin, like with a Dylan and like there's this good leadership built in type of situation there where he can probably work off of these younger individuals and they have a lot to build on. But, you know, you're just hoping to model after something like a phase, which is so unattainable in so many ways at the same time. At some point, it's going to snap and nothing's going to work and they're going to fall. But that's esports, right? That's Call of Duty. Either way, it's just how it goes.
Yeah, well, that's always like an interesting aspect of it is from year to year to see. And that's like something that I always kind of wish and I hope we go back to it at some point is with these games where there was a difference, like a big difference between every game. So then you would see some of these teams that were not that good and then they put together pretty solid team, but they connect so well on that game. And then another team that was so big falls way down. But I think something too that's really cool about like the model that Breach has taken on a lot of other teams is like they have that veteran leadership. And then eventually when those guys retire, then we're going to have the Snoopies and we're going to have Capsule who end up like kind of taking their place, hopefully, in the next couple of years. The guys who end up learning from the veterans and start showing that veteran leadership. I think that's the coolest thing to have seen in Call of Duty, seeing guys from a couple of years ago that were rookies. And now, like, thinking about, who was it on New York? Hydra.
Yeah,
like, I remember when he came in and everybody had, like, so much crap to say about him. They're like, dude, this guy can't even speak English. Like, you know, what is he doing here? And now everyone's like, he's one of the top two guys in the whole league.
A real thing. It's a real thing. It's even crazy to think that, like, we lost, like, Zinni and Skump and, you know, even prior years with Karma, like we think these things are just like passing of the guard, but in reality it does. It just opens up, you know, for these other individuals. But, you know, now these, you know, these Shotzis, these Illies, these Hydras, these Standies, like they're pretty solidified in the league. And if anything, like it's only been a couple of years yet, it feels like it's been 5 years or a decade. So it's exciting. It's a really cool port to be. And you guys actually kind of touched on it earlier when we're talking about like being fans of the players first. One thing that I really hope we get closer to is like Rocker was always this. I know Breach is similar. Like a lot of teams do one-on-ones, which is pretty common. I would love to see more. It's hard because it's a game that changes all the time, but like longer term deals will make esports a little more formidable and teams more formidable. And, you know, keeping Dylan on Rocker, like I think when people think about Rocker now, they picture Attach, right? That's like who you kind of thought
still
of.
Do.
Exactly. Yep. So it's kind of weird that that's like the Peyton Manning-isms of the Colts and then the Broncos and, you know, these different or Mike, let's see if I can do it. Ricardo, Daniel Ricardo. And no, who was he before he was?
He was on Red Bull.
Thank you. I was about to say Red Bull because he was with AlphaTauri before he became who he is now. But anyways, there you go. There was my attempt at an F1 reference. So
I appreciate it.
You stick with them either way, and that's kind of the key. And hopefully that continues with these young guns, especially literally young guns.
No, well, and something too that like I like that you mentioned. And it's not like a thing of us feeling old, even though people do always think we're old in this space.
Yeah,
even though we're only 25, you know. But you
only gets like, worse.
I can't wait for it, you know. but someone like Shotzi, like I still, it's weird. I don't know if you feel this way, and Justin, I don't know if you do too, but I still feel like Shotzi's like a rookie. Like,
agreed.
You know what I mean? Just because I'm like, oh, it hasn't been that long. But then I think about it, and I'm like, well, that's totally wrong. He's not. Like he's been playing for a few years now.
Wasn't he like OG Empire even? Wasn't he like?
Yeah.
Which is crazy. Like,
yeah, since the CDL started, he's been in it since MW. So he's played through MW, Cold War, MW, or Vanguard, MW2. Now this is his fifth title that he's been on.
Crazy,
you know. And you're like, oh man, like he's a kind of a seasoned vet at this point, you know. And same thing, someone like Hydra, like all these guys who have come in. Hydra's even newer than him, but I still think he's only on like his second year, you know, but it's like, no, he's been doing this for a minute, you know.
It's crazy. Time flies in it. At the same time, it's like just standing still. And like, I think the biggest thing that I take away from that piece is that, like, when Skump leaves, the world doesn't end. When Zinni leaves, the world doesn't end. Like, I get that these people are around when Zuma leaves, but, like, there's such an opportunity for the young individuals in this league to become, like, all around professionals. I keep saying that, but you guys, this isn't traditional sports. I don't get to, like, have a partnership deliverable, go execute it through a GM, and, like, I have to, like, a lot of times go to a player. Like, we're piecing things together to make it happen. The quicker we get towards professionalism in, and a lot of them are professionals, I'm just speaking in general terms, but, like, that's going to be so huge as we get closer to, like, fan meet and greets and, like, solidifying these things and guys getting up early for practice and working out. And again, the 4 or 5 years of the CDL, I think, has helped push that with the Wilfs and the Crafts and these bigger individuals getting involved. But it starts at, you know, the player level, and hopefully the fans encouraging these players to continue to do that piece. It's a huge piece.
Yeah. And the onus is on the players too, to be able to develop their brand and, like, turn themselves into the future Skumps and Methods and Zumas, like these fan favorite players. Cause if you don't do anything regarding, like, streaming, or, like, if you're not under a brand, like, again, that's why Breach has been so great. We're not just, you know, hyping them up unintentionally, but they've done a really good job of highlighting these players and giving them an actual name, you know, instead of Snoopy just seeing him as, like, a little icon on your screen when you're watching him play. It's like you actually get to hear him talk and hear his story and learn about him and see these guys joke around and be like, oh, they're actually cool people. And then they start to get that following, you know.
I think that's awesome.
Yeah, that's a big thing that's going to be, I think, for honestly, for the future of the league, you know, is for the have these big name players and those who are, like, starting to be developed into big name players to keep that ball rolling.
I will say an interesting tidbit that you guys might catch, especially as close fans, is that this is, again, a little peek behind the curtain, but if you're not seeing content with all four players, there's probably a reason. And I find that, like, an interesting tidbit that I never noticed until I was in the space. But, like, a lot of teams, they get along well on the map, let's say, but the banter is weird, or, like, they're awkward in person. And this Breach crew, especially, like, I think of a lot of the Rocker guys I was a part of, like, privy to that piece of my life, of course, but these Breach guys are so much fun. Like, my very first day on the job here, I flew out to Boston. I go into HQ. It's all dark. I'm like, okay, maybe I'm early, maybe I'm late. Who knows what's going on? And the guy at the front, Jeff, walks me in and, like, takes me to the back. He's like, they're all in the practice room. I was like, oh, I don't need to talk to the Breach guys. He's like, no, they're all back there. So I get back there, and it's, like, all the players, all of our content guys, like, the graphic designer in Meadows, like, Brett, my marketer, like, everybody's hanging out. And not that it was different at Rocker, but we had a very segmented life. It was like, we work for the players and the players work for us. And, like, our goal is to make everybody successful, but we don't mesh. Here it's super cohesive. It's fun. It was, like, I think an important piece, and hopefully something that pans out into, like, actual success too, of course. But there's such a camaraderie built in like-minded individuals in this world of, like, we're all the same goal and working together. I thought that was a really cool piece, especially when I joined Breach.
Yeah, I think you put that perfectly, Dylan, because to give you your flowers, I think you're a perfect fit just based off of how you're talking about Call of Duty and just esports in general. I see a lot of that in all the Oxygen guys. I mean, Mike and I, we live pretty close to Helix. We live, like, well, Mike used to, but I live, like, 15, 20 minutes away. We're always at the watch parties. Every single time we go there, when we see the Breach guys, Dens, Zed, they'll come over, say hi to us. I'm like, this is weird. It feels like a family, but we don't even, like, know each other like that. Yeah, even Adam, Murph, like, I mean, at Major 2, Adam came up to us and was like, we love you guys, and then hugged us. And I'm like, what?
I love that, man. Yeah. We got to make sure. Well, I mean, again, not to pay, like, maybe I would tell, I'll ask you guys after the podcast. We'll keep going. But I got something I want to ask you guys maybe after, maybe when we're not on air live recorded.
Okay. Leave everybody hanging.
You can bring it up on the next pod.
But yeah, I think that's really important. Like, going back what Mike said about the players, like, representing themselves. I don't think some probably do. It does mean a lot when we're at watch parties, like, watching, cheering them on, and then Slasher coming out, Priest or Snoopy or Cap coming out, like, you know, giving us, like, high fives, like, knuckle touches.
It's cool. It took me a while too. Like, I put a lot of these guys on pedestals, especially before I got into the league. But it's, I don't know. I haven't met a lot of like pro athletes or celebrities besides esports, but they could not be more dudes. Like they're just dudes. Mm-hmm. They're just dudes. And I remember meeting, like I talked to Simp at the launch event, and Simp, I watched the year before crush it on the CWL with the United. And I went up and I'm like, he's like 20. I'm like 25, you know, or not even, he was 18 probably. I was like 24, 25. And I like it. I was like, this is just a normal ass 5 foot, whatever kid. And I was like, I thought it was insane. I'm like, this is the best Call of Duty player in the world. And then I talk with him and he's like, so how's it going, man? And that's, I was like, it's like,
that's cool. A good impression.
Yeah, that is cool. It's really quick. But shout out Simp and Jericho. I'm a big Jericho fan too. But they're just cool, man. I love all these guys. I love all these individuals I've been lucky enough to overlap with. Coaches, same thing. Like nothing but love for, again, past Rocker rosters. But I had so much fun with the OG roster, like God RX. We called him Jerome when he was there. Like Silly with Justin, Salt with Adam, with Exceed, with Tiny, like all these random people. And then Coach Brian and Coach Jake. I just learned a lot from them. And I really think you guys are nailing it on the head with, like, it's so genuine. These people are all people. They don't have separate lives. They live, breathe, interact, post on socials like they're COD players. And that's what they are. It's a beautiful thing. And hopefully they, you know, ironically, I wish I was like a super good streamer, or like a pro, because I think I could just rake in partnerships for myself. I think that's one piece that a lot of individuals miss, is that it's probably pretty easy for them to just like have a little bit of sales savviness and all of a sudden close a bunch of deals. But I think that's one thing that's lacking with a lot of players too, is the ability to be their own salesman or saleswoman. So I hope they build off of that, to your point about like being their own identity. That's a big piece.
Yeah, that definitely is. And again, there's like a handful of leagues that are doing that and are at least trying to aid the players and trying to achieve that goal, like for the better of the league and then for the better of the team and the individual. So something I wanted to ask though, like, so obviously you were on Rocker and then you end up on Breach. Like what did that change look like for you and how did that all come about?
Yeah. So, you know, real transparently, like it's been in the news and it's been media now. So like, I'm happy to talk about it loosely, but, you know, transparently, Brett, again, come up for like the fourth time, he's going to have his ears tingling somewhere, but like, he is just the motherfucking dude, man. He very transparently and probably against every wish of every founder, every piece of money from the Wills, whoever, he let us know in the spring that they would likely be going through a merger. What that meant is that possible layoffs, likely layoffs. Oh, sorry, buddy. It's my old dog. He's 15. So, yeah, he's a good dude though. But what happened is, like, long story short, is that we were encouraged to like look for roles, and that can be an interesting piece because as the sales guy, like I was kind of last one out. I have to manage my clients up until the very end of things. You know, there were some tough layoffs. There were some sad days, but I respect everyone and I respect the business more than I respect the problems with it. You know what I mean? So I get that piece. What I had to happen was I sort of was loosely able to interview and pursue roles. Really dicey to navigate when you're not able to like say what's happening and also like want to be like, I'm a good employee. I'm not just like dipping, but I promise you there's a reason. And again, Brett kind of gave me verbiage to speak to individuals about. I interviewed with several orgs. I was looking for a director role simply because I was doing a lot at Rocker that I felt I wanted to be legitimized for. And I was really proud with a lot of these deals. But I interviewed with traditional sports, you know, transparently interviewed with the Vikings, with the Timberwolves. I talked with a lot of exterior like sales agencies, but Murph and I connected on Twitter, as I mentioned, the DMs. And it was just a really good fit. And I mentioned kind of my asks earlier about how we overlap, but it was an interesting process and something I've never done before. But I owe a lot to Brett in how to navigate that professionally. And like, I'll never do it the same ever again. You know, I hope I can live, breathe, die, retire with Oxygen Esports, with Boston Breach. But the reality is like, I really appreciated the process and was able to be respectful of everybody. And I think I was really communicative, which in any aspect is something everyone should strive for, whether you're quitting a sport or leaving school or getting traded somewhere or looking for a new job. I've always led with respect and communication. I think I was lucky enough to do that here, which is the key, you know, that's just the key.
Awesome. Yeah, and I know we've already gone over an hour, which is crazy because I feel like we've been talking for a bit.
For like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I know.
That's awesome. But we want to be meaningful for your time. But one last thing that we wanted to talk about was, so obviously Major One is coming up pretty soon. Is there like any insight you can talk about, or like, you know, tell our audience why you should come to Major One? Because we talk about it like every episode. Is there anything you want to shout out?
Oh man, probably plenty. First off, get your tickets. We're trying to set the record for largest in-person esports event in Call of Duty. So it was broken last year, technically, with the Boston Breach in-person, then Optic broke ours, and then it's gone cyclical. So we're shooting for 20,000 fans. We're opening up that upper level. So like, it's going to be fucking packed. Really juiced about that piece. I will say we've got a lot of awesome partners coming in. So again, selfishly from my side, we've got like 7 or 8 already, which is kind of crazy considering I've only ever brought in like 3 or 4 in past, whether Rocker events or otherwise. It's at MGM. So if you guys know that piece where it was last year, the next coolest part is definitely that Challengers is like 6 feet across the road. It's at House of Blues. The venue is going to be fucking insane. It's like, I had never been to a House of Blues before, so maybe you guys have, but like, it's basically another concert venue, and it'll have like the Passion Pit. It'll have PCs lined up everywhere. We've got awesome programming for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Weather is slated to be a lot better. I can't jinx it now, but who knows? I live in Minnesota, so everybody can suck it up a little bit. Right? But it's all relative, but no, man, like, appreciate you letting me shout out a bit. Like, I'm assuming we should either like throw a tickets description or something linked somewhere and I can give you guys that. But I'm just juiced, man. I love Majors. It sounds like you guys do too. For Call of Duty, there's no better place to just get in person and enjoy something with people. As you can tell, I get pretty passionate and I get a little energetic talking about it. But I've taken my wife's dad to these things, like my father-in-law now. Like, he has no idea what's going on. He just loves the energy. You know, he has a few beers and hangs out with random fans and just has a blast. So come and hang out. Like, I can't explain how much fun it's going to be, but we're juiced about it and we're honored we're the first one. It's a lot of work. It's very stressful right now, but that is what life is, and that's what we're honored to do. That's all that matters.
Love it, man.
And I'm getting goosebumps already, like, thinking about it, dude. Because
we called out of work already, Justin. We're already ready for this.
We got the hotels booked. We got the days off. We got the VIP tickets. We're right up front.
Oh, love it. You guys are doing it right. I tell people all the time to do it that way because there's technically, like, I appreciate you guys doing it. I don't mean to like shit on that piece of it because I know financials are financials, but there is no more worthwhile ticket in anything sporting wise than just doing VIP, especially 4-day. The value, like, imagine going to like a 4-day soccer game. Like, it's hard to explain. So I'm glad you guys did it that way because that is the way to do it.
100%. We say it all the time with traditional sports, like, yeah, it may seem expensive and like, yes, it is. But compared to traditional sports, it doesn't even compare.
Oh, imagine like a concert or something of your favorite. It's all 12 teams. Yeah, whatever. You guys don't need me to explain the value. It's a beautiful thing.
And anybody who's listening, like, just do the math. Like, go look up like any of your favorite sports team tickets and then go look up like a VIP breach ticket and you could do it right there. I mean, we've seen
bachelor parties. We've seen bachelorette parties. We've seen like guys come in with all their boys that they've never met in person before. They've only gamed with. I love it. I just love like hanging out with people. I'll shake hands with random people and drink with people I don't even know, but we all know each other. And it's a beautiful thing, man. It's the best thing about Call of Duty. 100%.
Yeah. And all the extras too, like, you know, VIP party, that's
Thursday,
awesome.
Baby. Kickoff. Yeah. Oh, yep. That'll be electric. That's going to be electric.
And it already sounds like that you guys took feedback from the community, which is great, because I wrote like I wrote like a 5-page essay, I swear to God, like on the survey. And I even told I don't know if you know her, but we had Sammy, who was formerly part of Oxygen. I gave her a lot of feedback on like merch and also the venue and like you guys opening up the top floor, which I think is awesome, because I bet seeing it from that high is probably so cool seeing
it's gonna be sick.
Band of people.
I'm glad you do feedback too. That's really important. So thank you for doing that piece. It's people, again, it's like DMs. we read everything. I see everything. It's almost to a frustrating point, but I love, it's good. Feedback is very important because it's very intentional and we can give that back to people. If you don't say anything, you can't get anything changed. So awesome job on that piece.
Yeah, but go, I mean, Dylan, thank you for coming on. I know we can keep talking for like another, you know, hour, 2 hours. We got to be mindful for your time. But yeah, do you want to shout out like your own personal stuff? Anything you want?
Yeah, I mean, same. I'll usually sign off in similar ways, man. But like, again, my name is Dylan Pomeroy. Like, partnerships over at Boston Breach and Oxygen Esports. Thank you guys for having me on. You can find me on Twitter specifically at Dylan Pomeroy. That's usually my favorite place to catch up with people or, you know, tweet and shit post and whatever. But also my LinkedIn. I've mentioned a few times, like, if you're looking for the professional side of esports, not getting in it as a competitor, I love having conversations with people. I can give guidance as someone who's been a part of it in a sense of like, I knew what I wanted to get into, and I'm not an old white dude from traditional sports. Like, I am someone who's worked their way up in this industry, and I'm very proud of that. So I'm happy to have conversations there too. But truly, you know, Justin, I appreciate you guys just having me on. Big fans of yours, and I'm just honored that you guys even asked me. It's always cool to get reached out to. That's a really cool piece of this. So thank you guys specifically.
Yeah, we appreciate it, man, big time. The feeling's mutual. So again, and you had mentioned too about your LinkedIn and everything. So we'll make sure on the YouTube for people who are listening, we'll go and put that in the description there. So if you do want to go and reach out to Dylan, you can go to the YouTube and click the link there. We'll have all your stuff posted there.
Yeah. And hopefully, Dylan, you want to come back maybe a year later, something like that. But yeah.
Love it. I love it. I appreciate you guys big time. Thank you again.
Of course. Of course. But yeah. Thank you, everyone, for listening to episode 152 of the COD Casuals. Make sure you go follow us on YouTube, like, comment, subscribe over there. We're also on TikTok and Instagram. So if you want to listen to the whole thing, we do clip it up and post it over there. And anchor.fm/the COD Casuals, where you can go and listen to all streaming platforms. And yeah, thank you, everyone. This has been episode 152 of the COD Casuals. We're your host, Justin.
And I'm Mike.
We'll see you guys next week.
Take it easy, everybody.
See ya.